good evening. This is the L.A. Steel Show.
L.A. Steel. And tonight we got a really special guest for you. We got Maria Fix Algieri joining us. For many of you who've listened before, you know how amazing she can be. And tonight we're going to be talking about the Book of Enoch and the mystery around Enoch and some of the fascinating stories. And we will be, and Maria is on the line right now. So,
hey, Leo.
Hi, Maria. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you feeling this evening?
Pretty good. How do you like my startup music? Did you hear it?
Yes, it's very enlightening.
Interesting, isn't it? I don't know. I had to start the show with something really good, so it's kind of appropriate. I don't know why. So, welcome. I'm so glad you could make it tonight and do the show with us. And I'm really excited about the topic. I've been doing some research myself since we last talked a couple hours ago. And
it's always a pleasure to do your show, number one. And thank you for the opportunity to share this research, especially about Enoch. It's a special aspect in the research that I was given through Eric von Däniken. So you can take it from there. And where do you want to go with it?
I can understand that. I found out something though, that I was reading something here that amazed me. That actually the legend of Enoch began with Sumerian kings. Okay, and he actually, I'm not sure if I read this correctly, but it looks like he may have actually been the Anunnaki
Pharaoh
Enki, okay, who was the, in fact, I'm looking at it right now, citing a second such text, R. Borger, who was the researcher, concluded that this seventh sage, whose name combined that of Utu Shamash with the lower world of Abzu, domain of Enki, was the Assyrian Enoch. So actually, I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, but was Enki actually Enoch?
See, I'm just going to back up for 1 minute. If you want to go into one of
I'm sorry. I'm always jumping ahead of myself here, but...
Not ahead of yourself, because in some of the ancient writings, especially translated so many times, if you want to go back to like a Webster's New World Collegiate Dictionary, this one was dated in 1953. I like to keep old dictionaries. And if you look up the word Enoch, interestingly enough, it starts with a capital E, and it's a Hebrew determination, and it says... The word Enoch dedicated, a masculine name. In the Bible, the eldest son of Cain. And that was in Genesis 4:17. Now, that's just a regular dictionary. Now, I have a special library here with antiquities. If you go into Manly P. Hall's work, who was a great philosopher, in his 1928 edition, he has an encyclopedia of basically secret knowledge. And if you look up the word Enoch,
right.
Enoch means taken by to preserve knowledge of sacred mysteries. Now, one more before you continue with that. If you go into the Doning International Psychic Dictionary, scripted in 1986 by Dr. June Betzer, Enoch, on page 207, it says, ancient. Enoch, the name Enoch, were seers for the books of Enoch. The title went to anyone who had authentic seership ability. So I'm going to say yes, because there are volumes and volumes and volumes in the apocryphal type. If you know them, to find out Enoch, the name Enoch itself, meant... a god, in a sense, or one, maybe an ET, someone with technology to teach humanity. But in the original volumes of the work that I was that was shared with me, Enoch was said to be the great grandfather of Noah. And I mean, there's just so many things. The Hebrew community called him Enoch. There was a Pharaoh Sarat in Egypt who used the same name. The Hebrews called him Enoch. And if you go, they say Enoch is a prophet in the Old Testament. There are books on Enoch called the Apocryphal Text. I'm quoting this from this work.
Sure.
They make a connection with Enoch to these ETs or extraterrestrial. And he clearly says in the first person that he met these extraterrestrial ETs, let's say, and now we have the writings in the book of Enoch. So the name Enoch itself represents the gods or great beings that were placed, the Incas, all of them, all the ones with the great pyramids across the world have some connection to the name Enoch. But he himself is the only one in antiquity that wrote in the first person. He wrote that he wrote that he was taken by the highest of the high, which I guess in religion you might call God or creator or something like that. But he said he was taken away for 300 years. And the highest says to this young man, Enoch, and summons his servants and says, you teach this man writing. He gave him names. You teach him buildings that will last for thousands of years in the future. And it just goes on and on and on. But yes, as far as the name Enoch, are they one and the same? I believe he showed himself in many different forms through thousands of years strolling our planet, let's say.
I had I thought this
very
is
excited about Enoch. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know I have to I got this great site, the Apocryphal. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Apocryphy volumes. These are the texts that were used for the Old Testaments or the books that were written and
were
taken and put into the Old Testament.
I can't pronounce this word for somebody. The apocryphal books. Enoch.
It means like apocalypse. Now,
yeah, I know.
People get nervous when they hear apocalypse because they believe destruction, but actually,
saying the word apocryphal.
It's apocryphal,
right? But the amazing thing in this particular text that I was reading, it was this. It says that the Book of Enoch has always been of great significance to Freemasons, and certain rituals dating back to long before Bruce's time, and I'm not sure who Bruce is here, but which is 1730 to 1794, identified Enoch himself with Thoth, the Egyptian god of wisdom. He also, it says, Enoch was the first who invented books.
Writing.
Wrote in the sign and seal. Enoch was the first to invent the books and different sorts of writing, and the ancient Greeks declared that Enoch is the same as Mercury or Hermes.
That's true.
And that he taught the sons of men the art of building cities and enacted some admirable laws, and he discovered the knowledge of the zodiac and the courses of the planets, and he pointed out the sons of men that they should worship God, that they should fast, and that they should pray, and they should give alms, votive offerings, and tenths. He reprobated abdominal foods and drunkenness. Not abdominal, abominable foods and drunkenness, and appointed
festivals. Body pure, basically, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this guy seemed to, Enoch was the one that taught everything here.
Well,
according to Masonic lore, Enoch invented writing and appeared that the real, and was the inventor of writing, that he taught men the art of building, and that before the flood, he feared that the real secrets would be lost. To prevent which he concealed the grand secret, engraven on a white oriental porphyry stone in the bowels of the earth. And
mm-hmm.
This is from the Masonic Encyclopedia that
yep.
this is from.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on to mention Manly Hall.
Yes.
And
P. Hall, if anyone wants to seek any research, Manly P. Hall is one of the highest in research as well. From Masonic to Kabbalistic, all the way through, a very great man and great.
He wrote that particular work by the time he was 27 years old.
That's correct. And in fact, his first printing was in 1926, his encyclopedia of this knowledge, but it wasn't printed till 1928.
No, Maria, I also get
a great deal of research and knowledge through Manly P. Hall's work. And
I think at least 10 or more programs on Manly P. Hall's work.
Mm-hmm.
Manly P. Hall's lectures that George had given me, they were absolutely amazing. They were one hour. It was funny too because they were designed for a 1 hour lecture, all right, and that he had given at the Philosophical Society, I believe.
That's right.
And there was a whole slew of these lectures that I got, I think I did at least 10 or more shows around 10 different lectures, they're in my archives.
I actually have him on audio tape. I have a library of his lectures.
His lectures?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
The old audio tapes, you know, the little ones. Not 8-track, not that bad.
That's how old that is. These were in the 70s, I think, when these lectures were printed.
Right.
So.
Now, when we're talking about Enoch himself, as I said, in a regular dictionary, if you're going to look up like in a Webster dictionary, it will say one who is a seer or knower of books. So he's not limited to one particular person. But in the first writing, what's interesting that I studied with, or Eric von Däniken shared with me, is that in the volumes and the volumes, he says, if you know them, in the Book of Enoch, he's the only one in the first person in antiquity who writes and says, I was there, I did this, I felt that, I heard this. And in one of the ancient texts, it says that he was the great, that Enoch was the great grandfather of Noah. So he was worried about the flood. It ties right in. And it said that he was taken away, as I said, for 300 years and taught everything there was to know about the universe, and that was to take this, and that's why the pyramids were built. Now, if you want to go into any of the Egyptian work, there's Giorgio Dukakis, who was a protege with Eric von Däniken, and I took a quote from some of my notes here from him, and it says, it is written in ancient Egyptian texts, the pyramids were built to store knowledge of the universe dictated by, he called them, the guardians of the sky, which that's the second time that quote comes up through the study of Enoch. It comes up in another text as well. And in that other text, it says that, let's see, I was quoting things today because I wanted to get it all out. It says, okay, now we finally have writings in the books of Enoch. Now, there's volumes and volumes of them, as I said. So it comes up in different names, but they're all, I believe, the same teacher. Again, walking maybe thousands of years across our planet and building these giant pyramids all over so that history or the knowledge of the universe is not destroyed. And it says he was ordered to construct the building which cannot be destroyed by the thousands of years of the future. This is quoted by Eric von Däniken. And it says, and in the ancient Egyptian text, They speak that the pyramids were built by human beings with the assistance of the guardians of the sky. So twice the same quote comes up as guardians of the sky. But the thing that Mr. Von Daniken was so fascinated by is that here Enoch supposedly was an eyewitness. He was taken to the highest of the high, as I guess we would call either God or a creator if you're in a religious frame of mind. But here we have eyewitnesses. He sees this. He hears this. He heard the noises. In any of the teachings in the past, or if you look it up, the first word next to Enoch says ancient, no matter where you go. So when we're trying to date him, even that it says that he's the great-grandfather of Noah, who knew about the flood, and in the work that you were just reading, they didn't want any of these teachings to be destroyed. Now, you can even go to Mexico at Tehuacan. They have the Great Pyramid of the Sun. They have the Great Pyramid of the Moon. Now, according to the legends, these things were built by gods who were giants. And they said that they were built at the end of one of the four worlds of the earth, which would be the fifth day of the Mayans. Or, you know, it all ties in together. But the prodigy and the follow-through on the study of Enoch continues to be not only mysterious, but it links not only the pyramids, the buildings, the ancient artifacts found around the world, the Nazca Lines, Easter Island, anything that has to do with human beings seeking knowledge from some being that ascends or descends to the planet in some sort of a vehicle. In fact, there was a quote here that he said that when these visitors, let me see where I can find it. Hold on one second. I want to quote it directly. Okay. They call them gods. All right. These gods, often with the visitation, were accompanied by great noise, billowing smoke, and glistening garments. So, in a sense, these could be ancient travelers. But at any rate, Enoch himself, writing in the first person, and volumes and volumes, if you know where to find them, it takes a while, volumes and volumes of the Apocryphal texts. These are the texts that belonged to the Old Testament. And not all of them went into the Old Testament, so you have to know where to find them. But at any rate...
let me just stop for one second. I think I have something relevant to that. It's saying that this guy Brian, I'm not sure, he wrote the book Enoch, The Greatest Story Never Told, but in this it states that some Jews adopted, there was a substantial Zoroastrian influence on Judaism when Jewish exiles were exposed to the Persian religion under the Babylonian captivity. Some Jews adopted any Enochian tradition in Babylon. During the exile, and brought it back to Canaan when Cyrus gave them leave to return. The Enochian Jews were detested by the priesthood in Jerusalem, and they were forced to flee into the desert before 300 B.C. Naturally, they supported the Maccabees during the uprising of 165 B.C. The Enochians of Qumran, updated the text to include Judah the Hammer in the big story. But this is what's interesting. Also, the last of the Essence stragglers buried it, the secret book, in Cave 4 in Qumran in 70 CE. The urban Christians and Jews of the Near East rejected it. The authors of the Apocalypse rewrote and retitled it, but they didn't understand the heptadic structure of the original lines, the arrangement of sevens. And he says the revolution of St. John is pure gibberish, a sloppy rehash of Babylonian myths and legends, and only the students of the Merkabah in Babylonia possessed the key to the Enochian mystery. I thought that was interesting. So actually these things were lost and retranslated and and thrown into Revelation and thrown into other different.
Well, if you're going to go to look for Enoch in the Bible, there's really only, you're only going to find like one phrase in the New Testament, because Enoch is not really part of the New Testament Bible. The works were ancient, were actually being saved by the constructions of these great pyramids and the mysteries that were hidden within. As you said, the bowels of the earth are buried beneath, this is just an idea, like buried beneath or within the pyramids themselves.
Here's another fascinating thing that they stated. The Messiah first appears as pre-existent in the apocryphal first book of Enoch, which was originally written in Hebrew or Aramaic 150 B.C. And from that period on, the concept of the Messiah, who was created in the sixth day of creation, or even prior to them, or who was born at variously stated subsequent dates, and was then hidden to await his time, became a standard feature of Jewish Masonic eschatology.
Right. Now, if you look up, like I said, in Enoch and any of, like, just regular collegiate books and things of this nature, it will say it is a Hebrew name because of that. But again, the dating, there was another quote, which I was looking for my notebook when I was with Mr. Van Doniken, and I really couldn't locate it right now. Even that, I am clairvoyant. But I remember him telling me that Enoch was, it was his second time, born twice, he was called that. So it was his second time on the planet rather than the first time. So that's why I believe he has more than one name, even that there are many great beings that were on the planet and everyone having a different name. But it's always the same story. Some celestial being visits the earth and all the great religions throughout the world and in some sort of vehicle or form and leaves a particular structure or history about them, the universe, or as you would say, the ancient texts of the apocryphy. Now, when people say apocalypse, the word apocalypse itself means that which unfolds, or that is, which is beyond the veil. So many people see it as destruction, because in the volumes and volumes of the study of the Days of Days, which is another name for the highest of the highest, they say every cycle has a beginning and an ending. And in the work with this here, with Enoch, it's saying that he had a second birthing on the planet during after one of the destructions of our planet, and then was instructed to build structures that would last for thousands and thousands and thousands of years with the knowledge contained within them, so that they're not lost in antiquity.
Can I just add this? Zachariah Sitchin's wrote this says, in the book of Enoch, it was the archangel Uriel. God is my light, which is the name of that, which is what it means, who showed Enoch the secrets of the sun, solstices and equinoxes, and six portals in all, and the laws of the moon, including interpolation. I'm not sure what that means, but and the 12 constellations of the stars, all the workings of heaven. And in the end of the schooling, Uriel gave Enoch, as Shashmash and Adad had given, I can't pronounce it, Imer Duraki, which is, this is people who were given this knowledge, heavenly tablets, and instructing him to study them carefully and note every individual fact therein. Returning to Earth, Enoch passed this knowledge to his old son, Methuselah.
That's correct. Methuselah was known as his son.
Yeah, and then he states that the knowledge granted Enoch included all the workings of heaven, earth, and seas, all the elements, their passages and goings, and the thundering of the thunder and of the sun and the moon, the goings and changings of the stars, the seasons, years, days, and hours. And this was from the book of the Secrets of Enoch.
Right.
So many volumes.
And
just amazing. I mean,
as far as ancient texts, Enoch was a prophet. He was known as a god in a sense. He was lifted from this planet and taught by many. He has named all his teachers by names in some of these ancient texts, which I couldn't find in my notebook, but I'm still going to locate it.
No, but he says here that according to the book of the Secrets of Enoch, and he's quoting, it seems that when the prophet Enoch was taken up into heaven, he saw the air and then the ether. Then he reached the first heaven where 200 angels rule the stars, and where he saw a sea greater than the earthly sea. And the second heaven was gloomy. The third heaven he saw the tree of life with four streams of honey, milk, oil, and wine flowing from its roots. And the place of the righteous is in this heaven, and the terrible place where the wicked are tortured. There was also the place on which God rests when he comes into paradise. In the fourth heaven, he saw luminaries, wondrous creatures, and the host of the Lord. There are many hosts in the fifth and in the sixth, and he saw bands of angels who studied the revolutions of the stars. And finally, in the seventh heaven, he saw great angels, and he got a distant glimpse of the Lord on his throne. And you know what amazes me here is the similarity to the book of the Agni Yoga,
right?
And the hierarchy.
That's correct.
The book of hierarchy, seven. And how they explain the sixth and the seventh hierarchy, levels. And how these messages are constantly coming down to Earth, but filtering through. But I'm seeing these similarities between these ancient texts or these different texts. But that was a fascinating glimpse. I mean, that was a fascinating.
Peekaboo. And in one of the Agni Yoga books, and I think it was called Illumination, there was one quote that stuck in my mind, and it was, yea to those who peek beyond the veil. Now, again, apocalypse means veil, or that which is unfolding, or seeing beyond. So what's occurring on our planet now, truth is going to show itself in many different forms, and there are so many different ways of knowing or seeking these mysteries, let's say. I'd like to use the word mysteries because some people say, truth, creationism, God, they get all mixed up with a thousand different words. But what we're going to find and what's occurring right now on our planet is the fact that that which needs to be known will be shown. It's very, very simple. And if you're seeking to discover I guess this sounds like such an old word, self-realization and things of that nature, but it's the aspect of your connectiveness to the universe, the cosmology, your connectiveness to your purpose on your journey. I can go on and on. I'm at a lack of words on how to describe exactly how Enoch himself was overlooked into the writings of the New Testament, when here we had a person speaking in the first person. I was, I did, I heard, I saw, these were my teachers. This one, as you were saying, as he passed the different ethers and the different worlds. See, everyone will interpret the volumes different because they were... They were done in German. They were done in Latin. They were done in Greek, and even in the the ancient Egyptian texts.
Yeah. Listen,
there were the writings as well.
I want to ask you a question here, because I'm just reading something where Enoch's third heaven seems very similar to the region known as Arvirta Varsa, which is in the Eastern tradition. I believe the Buddhists actually Hindu. Bhagavata Purana.
That's cool.
Okay. And the Bhagavad Gita or the Veda, whatever. And which I'm not, I should be more familiar with, but I'm not. But he goes on to say that explains that in that religion is the same as the in as much the same as Enoch's description. They describe the seven levels, and one is air, ether, Olympus, the element of fire, the firmament, the angelical region, and the realm of the Trinity, But they're saying that the Lord Brahma, and which may correspond to the place in which God rests when he comes into paradise, because Enoch said that in that fourth or fifth level.
Right.
Is where God comes to rest, okay, or is it paradise? And so many of these religions are all connected to this particular to Enoch's work. It seems
that's the mystery. That's the secret.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, and I'm seeing it now, and I'm seeing it. It's related, and it makes a whole lot of sense that Enoch would be. I mean, not only would he be connected to the Book of Enki or Enki, which is the Anunnaki, all right, but you know, if he was transported to another planet, let's say, or to another dimension, all right,
correct,
to or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
well, according to the writings, yeah, guardians. Yeah. They said he was lifted to the highest by the guardians of the sky. That
right,
was in his own first writings.
But to somebody like Enoch, I was saying, to somebody from this planet, okay, to be brought to be lifted up to an extraterrestrial, and I say this, to be taken by the Anunnaki,
mm-hmm,
and to another planet. All right, and taught. This is a theme that is happening. I've read several books of people of these things happening to different people where they've been transported and taught these incredible, like Pleiadians or others.
How about the works of Echinar? Echinar is soul travel.
See, I don't know that one, but I know that there are many others that have been that. In fact, are you familiar? Do you know Preston Nichols, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Preston, according to Preston, he was abducted young, and brought up to, and he was taught this the electromagnetics, okay,
mm-hmm,
at a very very young age as a child, and when he came back, he was able to do these incredible things. He still does. With electromagnetic fields, so but this could very easily be that kind of thing with Enoch. I mean, I'm not saying that he didn't see God, but he could have. But to like to me, if a remarkably extraterrestrial intelligence came down and spoke to me and said I'm God, then by God, I'd have a hard time not believing him, you know.
Actually, and his first,
they zap you up to some incredible place, you know. It's just wow, you know. What do you think? What would you normally think?
Well,
you know?
I'm thinking in our customary nowadays science, many thinking would be it's ET technology. when you're talking about, you know, your magnetics and things of this nature. In fact, one of the first groups I worked with was with the Palmer Institute, with the Weather Institute, where they studied my magnetism. And then that brought me into Kirlian photography, where they did photographs of my hands, seeing all this energy being emitted out, working with a so-called orb with orgone energy. And I look back at the research and the experiences that I've been through, and when I read about and had the opportunity to meet Mr. Von Daniken and him telling me about these, he called them visitations. He called them ETs, and who knows what they really are. They could be us in the future coming back to help us again, you know, because
how many times
has this world been alive, destroyed, you know, and it's going through a birthing process again, I believe, now. But there was, in the first writing, again, not to be too redundant, that it was Enoch's second time on the planet coming back. So I believe there were thousands and thousands and maybe even millions of years where we have been visited by great beings, whether you call them gods, ETs, or using great technology to advance humankind to free themselves from the burdens. I mean, we have the means. One of the definitions of Enoch said, Enoch, ancient seers for the books of Enoch. The title went to anyone who had authentic seership ability. Okay, that's not the one I was looking for. Enoch, here it is. This was from Manly P. Hall's book. It said, Enoch means, in other words, the means behind something, means taken by to preserve knowledge of sacred mysteries. So there in itself, it just says that the means behind this is to preserve the sacred knowledge of the universe, the mysteries, the different levels. And who knows this? I mean, we're in one universe. In fact, we're in one solar system, one galaxy. But if you look out there, only these greater, perhaps ancient beings, where there's evidence all over the planet of some greater technology given to our ancients to build these magnificent buildings that are lasting for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Even finding ancient maps that showed Greenland without the ice cap, and it wasn't discovered till thousands of years later. It was on a gazelle skin or something like that. Anyway, I could go all over.
I want to do this because there seems to be a key to this to Enochian prophecy.
I'm just going to interrupt you 1 minute. It's funny you use the word key because there are works out there that are called the Keys to Enoch as well, because there's volumes and volumes, as I said, and translated in many different ways and languages. But
in that quote that I stated earlier, it says, only the students of the Merkabah, in Babylonia, possess the key to the Enochian mystery. And it says that the authors of the Apocalypse rewrote and retitled, the Book of Enoch, the Revelations. But they didn't understand the structure of the original lines, or the arrangement of sevens. Now this comes up again and again in everything as far as the sevens. And can you explain how that is the seven plays such an important role in so many different
Yes, I can. I will do the best I can.
One thing with the last quote
that you did say, the word only I worry about. Only, you said those of, what was the quote again? You used the word only.
Hang on a second.
You were just quoting it. And when I hear the word only, It makes
only the sons of Merkabah.
All right. Merkabah. All right, now
in Babylonia.
Yeah, Da Vinci, all of them, the Merkabah was known, the energies were known, but the word only, and Merkabah is connected to what you would call your alchemists, you know, different philosopher's stone, all of those things. So the word only, I would omit myself, because I don't believe there's only one way to do all this. But let's get back to the seventh.
The sevens are fascinating, because it seems like everything, seventh heavens, and I wanted to know what does that mean? What does seven numerologically, what does the sevens mean?
All right, seven means manifest but not complete. All right, it's past five, which let's say if you're going from one to ten.
Right.
It's past five, which is actually ruled by the planet Saturn, and that's transition. Five is a transitional. Six, the new seeds. Six is a seed planted in the ground. If you can imagine a little seed and a little sprout coming up. Seven now starts to sprout. You visibly see the structure in front of you, yet it has not completed itself. There are seven colors, seven hierarchies, seven, we can go on and on. I'm trying to think of even in gambling, isn't seven good or something when you throw the dice?
Sevens and elevens and seven.
Yeah, seven elevens and things like this. But seven in itself means journeying toward harvest, because it's not fully manifested. And I know I use nature as my analogies, because it itself is a visual manifestation of our physical form of the cosmos, our microcosm, all right? So here, if you're planting a seed and the seed is in the ground, by the time it pops through the earth, that seed comes from the underworld, let's say it's buried in the earth, the seed pops through and you have a little seedling. That little seedling or that little plant would be known as a seven. That seven is that you physically can see it, you can touch it, but yet it has not developed to the ten yet. It has not developed to bear fruit at the moment. So seven is the colors of the rainbow, the prisms, the hierarchy. Now the hierarchy would be the seven different types of human beings that are created. There are seven hierarchical figures, the seven different planes. So when we do seven, 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 sevens, all these sevens represent is that it's a transition getting ready for, if you take an eight as an ankh, turn it sideways, represents the infinity. So when you get to the eight, it's the accumulation, the realization that we don't have to have bondage to our body, a freedom of some sort. Nine would be the sum total of arising and now ready to harvest, which would be the ten. That brings us back to one and the self. So what happens with seven is that we're past halfway there, yet where's the fruit? Didn't I plant the seed? Didn't I do the... Why is the earth trembling? Why do I have all these troubles? So people are not that comfortable living with the life path of a seven, or even trying to even understand truly the sacredness of a seven. It's the visibility of that which exists in a physical form.
So to break, to understand these continual sevens, we have to understand that it's the manifestation of the seven is essentially is the
physical manifestation. Like you could see color, you could
what he's saying is he actually saw this
exactly.
This manifested, and that's what this makes a lot more sense to me now, what this guy was saying, because
it's the tree of life.
Right, not what Enoch was saying, but what this guy was saying about the apocalypse. He says, The authors of the Apocalypse rewrote and retitled it, but they didn't understand the heptotic structure of the original lines, the arrangement. No, heptotic, actually, which means the seven, I believe. H-E-P-T-A-D-I-C.
Okay.
Of the original lines, the arrangement of sevens. So whether or not the book was written in seven lines, or which I could understand if they, in other words, if the actual book of Enoch was written in a seven line stanza.
I just know that there are volumes and volumes and volumes. I wouldn't limit the understanding.
Manifestation that he actually was there, and that reality is, and that he came back from there manifesting and went in there. I can understand where the seven
came back as one with the knowing.
Yes, yes. I can understand exactly what the sevens signify here, the arrangements of seven, and in Enoch's work. And it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know. That understanding what seven means now. But
around the seven, if you were to look at, and in fact, in much of Enoch's work, there is testaments of symbols, symbologies, and things of this nature. And with, I'm just trying to recall it in my thought process. With the seven itself, the seven becomes the staff at one point, where it you can rest your arm on it like a cane. I'm trying to recall the work I have in my memory, let's say. But sevens are the physical manifestation of that seed or the planting of that which you know. But if you took a tarot card, that's where I was going with the symbolism. Even the tarot comes from Enoch as far as symbols of the physical manifestation of this world as almost holographic to the engineering of these higher beings that gave him this teaching to come back. And holographically, we're now in a physical form. So we have these sevens, but we have the means, but are we free from that which we, even if we know this truth, are we free from the bondage of being in a physical form or a human form and things? Are our souls free? Oh, do we have good men? We may have good ideas, but is humanity good? Is it for the good of all things of this nature? So having the means, understanding the sevens, understanding the works, where does that take us? Have we truly released ourselves even from knowing this great knowledge, and has it brought good to our humanity or human beings or even great beings? Or I just think there's a great deal of ET technology from the past that we are discovering now. And if you truly, or I don't have to say truly, those that seek become the knowledge. Because if they're seeking, you're going to find those things if you want to know. And I was, as I said, totally enthralled by this story of Enoch that I heard firsthand from Mr. Von Doniken. And I had three wonderful days of research that went beyond the pale, because when I was in seventh grade, at that time they didn't have middle school, I'm dating myself, it was junior high school at the time, I purchased the book Chariot of the Gods. I read it, I started the first ET Club after school in the library, and I wrote to Mr. Von Doniken about the work at the time, and he sent me back seven pages of research, and I was only a teenager, so his enthusiasm and great knowledge in this field, and I'm just talking about Enoch. This is one part of his research, but he truly believed himself or knows that in his translations of all these different works, volumes and volumes now, that Enoch was of a great being, or at least lifted to an arena where he saw the world becoming, because Enoch brought that which he knew, him himself being that seed, planting it into the planet, and the seven sprouts up. Here you have your pyramids. Here you have ancient teachings. So fear not a seven, by the way, because it means even in your tarot, if you look at the deck, the one is journeying in the deck, and you see the pentacles on the ground ready to be harvested, the big pentacle behind the being, which means you're moving in the direction of that unfolding. The pinnacle would be the higher level, or at least the harvest of that truth that you seek. At a word, Leo.
No, I actually, what I was doing is I was going back to, I was just skimming through what you were talking about, the Book of Enoch. And, the apocalyptical aspect of what he was saying, and part of it, and he says, says, but with the righteous he will make peace. Making more, he predicted the end of the world and that kind of thing. It says the Holy Great One will come forth from his dwelling in the earth, the Eternal God will tread upon the earth on Mount Sinai and appear in the strength of his might upon the heaven of heavens, and all shall be smitten with fear, and the watchers shall quake, and the great fear and trembling shall seize them into the ends of the earth. And the high mountains shall be shaken, and the high... This sounds like the polar shift problem here to me. And the earth shall be wholly rent in sunder, and all that is upon the earth shall perish, and there shall be a judgment upon all men. But when with the righteous, he will make peace, and will protect the elect, and mercy shall be upon them, and they shall be in, all belong to God, and they shall be prospered, and they shall be blessed, as he will help them all and light and appear unto them, and he will make peace with them. And behold, he cometh in 10,000 of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all and destroy all the ungodly.
The 10,000 are the eyes of the spiritual eyes of the lotus, the 10,000 warriors of God's angels.
Right. And to convict all flesh of all the works of their ungodliness which they have ungodly committed, and all the hard things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Then he goes into chapter 2, and he did more observe ye. But it says, things upon which take place. I'm just looking for more horror stuff. But basically, from the Book of Enoch, you can see almost the exact words in the apocalypse.
Okay? In any religion, in any...
In Revelation. You can
see nation.
Right out of Enoch, yeah.
And everywhere. Because this being, this young man, as it was Eric von Däniken called him,
right,
had these great beings seed him, fill him, give him. He became that which knowledge was. And that's why almost any research that you seek, both physically or through scripture, through the Bible, through the ancient works, through the monuments on our planet, you will find a reference to the name Enoch as part of the manifestation of the seven, the manifestation of taking that which was given to him and put down volumes and volumes and books. But see, a lot of this is getting lost. in our history and things of that nature. It's a good thing that you have the opportunity to have a speaking outlet where researchers or those that are seeking to uncover mysteries about themselves. I think people should, perhaps it's too strong a thought, but perhaps one should ponder on the idea of their purpose on this planet.
Here it is that, you know, what you're saying basically is what is, you know, he's declaring himself, stating that he would, he was named the Scriber, and it says, yeah, in chapter 12 of his book, it says...
He taught writing. Writing was so ancient that the people
exactly.
that wrote these things down, these experiences, the writings, the on cave walls and things like that...
He says here that, before these things, Enoch was hidden, and no one of the children of men knew where he was hidden. And where he abode, and what had become of him. This is when he went to heaven, okay?
Yep, 300 years.
Yeah, and his activities had to do with the watchers, and his days were with the holy ones. And I, Enoch, was blessing the Lord of Majesty and the King of Ages, and lo, the watchers called me Enoch the Scribe, and said to me, Enoch, thou Scribe of Righteousness, go declare to the watchers of the heaven who have left the high heaven, the holy eternal place, and have defiled themselves with women, and have done all the children of earth, done as all the children of earth do, and have taken unto themselves wives. Ye have wrought great destruction on earth, and ye shall have no peace nor forgiveness or of sin, and inasmuch as they delight themselves in their children, the murder of their beloved ones shall they see, and over the destruction of their children shall they lament, and shall make supplication unto eternity, but mercy and peace shall not attain. So this is God saying, to write this down and go tell the watchers.
Okay, now.
Those are the fallen angels, yeah.
Not only fallen angels, but what happened was is that they became enamored with the female species and started to mate with
them. That's right.
Them. So,
but they had horrible problems because they had, they were, as far as I can remember, the problems with this created the giant races. Okay, they created abnormal beings and stuff. But it also created, I guess, the heroes of the Bible. But I always wondered if that was where we, what became of the children of the watchers, you know? And here it says that they'll be murdered, okay?
Well, the first murder supposedly that took
place
on the world was with Cain and Abel,
right.
The two brothers. One was...
Right.
One was the shepherd, and Cain rose up against his brother because he was jealous, and he killed him. And did that make God angry? Is that what they're talking about, spilling the blood upon
it? Because if Enoch was the seventh descendant or something, or seventh generation,
father of Noah,
but.
Also the father of Methuselah and the brother. Wait, I think the brother of Cain and Abel were the son of Adam and Eve according to the Bible.
That's right, yeah. And according to the Anunnaki, there actually was the Adamites were what the Anunnaki claimed were the those were the offspring of the. Of the Anunnaki and the Anunnaki DNA, all right?
Yes.
That was intermingled with the human DNA, and the descendants of that were called Adamites, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first men. That's what it meant, first men, first man. And
heads.
Right, right. But it was based from the fact that the Anunnaki were huge, were extremely large people. I mean, they were 18, 20 feet tall, you know.
All right, here, this is just a little thing here from T. Wakan. Giant pyramids of the sun, giant pyramids of the moon. According to the legends, these things were built by gods who were giants, it says. Another pyramid in Mexico.
Right, right.
So it was years old.
There you go, yeah.
There's a place, that's Bolivia. That's an amazing site there. And it puts
right.
the gods to children's play, actually.
But these are, but you know, if you relate this now to the watchers, okay, to the fallen angels or to the, you know, fallen angels, they would appear to be from, you know, fallen angels from what Enoch, the way it would have been described to him, you know, these guys come down, these huge people, these giants come down and then somehow they mate with women. But what it was, if you take it from the Anunnaki journals or the Sumerian tablets, they state that what it was the seed, okay, or the, not the seed, but the DNA was mingled with human, and then later, and what they did is they created an advanced race, okay. Which became the human race, okay, as we know it now, but with a higher intelligence, okay, and a longer lifespan, and the sort of intuition and whatnot, right? So that plays in. I'm sorry. That plays into all of these, all of the legends, all of the everything of how man was created. But it gives it a more extraterrestrial again.
Technology. Yeah, well, or gods, you know, according to whatever label you'd like to.
Yeah, like Noah's Ark makes so much sense if you consider that Noah's Ark was a vessel that was created to contain. I mean, you couldn't have two of every possible creature on Earth, but you could have the DNA. Okay, or the cells of them. Okay,
the mystery of how the ark was built to begin with, especially if Enoch was Noah's great grandfather.
Exactly right. Exactly. Yeah. I know. Where you know that's how he got that information, or how to build it, I guess. But the thing that amazes me is how. After I read that those things about the Anunnaki, and prior to the flood, they had foreknowledge of it. They supposedly left the planet, but a small group remained. Okay, in the flood, and saved the DNA of all of these animals. Okay. So they were able to, you know, that eggs and their an egg and a seed, I guess, or a sperm of all of these different animals, so that they were able to, or embryos, so they were able to reproduce or recreate, the world after the flood.
Listen, and much like today's technology, where a woman can freeze an embryo.
That's right. That's right. So we know
it's high tech then. It's high tech now, and. When we get into the electromagnetic discoveries of, we're still digging into our Earth for fuel, for God's sakes. An abundance and infinity of energy, and still needing thousands of years of great knowledge lost somewhere to the perhaps inability of man to realize his greatness or his ability to create. And now we're in one of those times where they say it could be the end of days or the days of days or the apocalypse or if you want to get into many of the phrases of the Bible, we also have to realize that man himself wrote and rewrote and re-scripted stories about our biblical days and how things were. So you can find the lineage of truth, and others you can see that they were perhaps borrowed or copied. And at any rate, throughout the planet, in the history of all the religions, you will find that a being of some sort descended upon our planet, call them angels, call them ETs, to guide humanity. And I think this is the great mystery. Which writings and how do you find them, or what are you seeking to do with what you know? Truly, it goes back to the idea of purpose, you know, thinking purpose, you know, your service to humanity, your service to the government, your service to the money exchangers. If we can remember the story about Jesus getting all upset with the money exchangers in the temple. I recently experienced a baptism where the priest was fundraising, so he had football boxes to buy to raise money for the parish. And the thought of the ancient teachings where Christ was so upset with the money exchangers, as he called them, in the temple. They didn't belong together, you know. And here in modern day, here is this wonderful priest. I mean, his personality was wonderful and this and that. And here he's going to fundraise and let's gamble. Well, fundraise, who wants to buy a football box? Yeah, just
a lot of reason. Bingo.
On the line, we got lost.
I remember, I mean, bingo is still played in every church.
I know, man, you know, and what about worshiping idols in front of us and all of those
statues? Yeah. It's just, it's there. But
you're right.
The hypocrisy and the I don't know, the naivety of denial of the church is just overwhelming to me. Always has been, and
logic doesn't always work to justify the reason. I know my mom, as I was very young, and God bless her soul, she was a very wise woman. She said to me, "If reason doesn't work, try a rhyme." So if we can't reason it out, if we can't find out a reason why this is happening, a rhyme would be the muses, the gods, the rhythm, the poets, things of that nature. So if you can't find or understand a reason why certain things were done certain ways, like, do you truly believe these pyramids were built because the egos of these great pharaohs were so great they had to build one better than the other, like a giant museum? I don't think so.
Well, I you know, every time I talk to you, you inspire the hell out of me. And I think what I want to do is I want to do on my Thursday night programs, I think I'm going to do a series, at least a number of shows, to read the Book of Enoch. And I don't know how many chapters there are, I believe, or sections. I believe there's five.
Yeah.
Five sections to it. But
that's only one book. There's volumes and volumes and volumes. I'll help you with the research as soon as I can find the book I'm looking for. I have them listed.
I'd really enjoy that, because this is something to me. He is the origin of prophecy, origin of knowledge. If he's Thoth and Hermes and Mercury and maybe even Christ. Because he talks about the Messiah in here, and how the Messiah was made. He was actually created in the sixth day, all right, and stayed until the end times. He just goes on and on and on. You got to wonder if even a million people. No, I've even heard of the Book of Enoch, you know. because
would be an overestimate, I think, truly.
What's that?
Not many have studied the Book of Enoch. In the 80s, when most of the early 80s, when most of the metaphysical and self-awareness and the 60s people broke into the freedom world of let's find discovery, let's try alternative methods of understanding. And
it's funny. The lost books of I had a great book that I actually bought in the 70s, I believe it was, but it was called the Lost Books of the Bible, I believe it was, or the Lost Books of the Lost Book. It wasn't the Lost Books of Enoch. It was the Lost Books of Eden, or something like that. And
Lost Gospels.
No, not the Lost Gospels. It was the Lost Books of Eden or something to that effect.
The Lost
Books.
Okay.
Of Eden.
Okay. Familiar with it, but that doesn't mean anything. Go ahead.
I think that was it. But it could be the Lost Books of the Bible or the Lost Books of something. But what it did is in these Lost Books, they talked. It was the Lost Books of Eden, I believe it was. The Lost Books of Genesis.
Okay.
The Lost Books of the Genesis, and all of these different books that were actually created that if you read any of these, it made perfect sense. It didn't make sense it made sense of the Bible of the especially of Genesis.
It's the Gnostics, the work of the Gnostics. Who were the true, I don't want to use the word true, but who were devoted disciples, the teacher?
Yeah, one of the books that really knocked me out, because the biggest mystery and the hardest thing to imagine, all right, to me, okay, in the book of Genesis, was that Adam and Eve were the first male and female, right?
Supposedly.
And supposedly. They gave birth to Abel and Cain.
Cain and Abel, correct?
All right. Later, they gave birth to a daughter or something like that, and it goes down the line. Cain gave birth to. But the problem with that is, who did Cain impregnate to get? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Not only that.
Is this an instance?
Cain, who was banished for killing
Abel,
the first, supposedly, who was murdered, he was banished and sent out. It said that God said that he would put a mark on him so as no one else would bother him, in a sense. Who are these other beings if there was only
Adam
and Eve? I believe.
Where did he get these? What was this all? Did everybody? Was everybody created from one couple? Adam and Eve. No. And then they talk about Cain's sister. All right. Well, Cain's sister is mentioned in the Bible, I believe. And then his son was Seth, I think.
And how about that?
Adam's
first choice, by the way. There was a woman before her, and she was named as the moon. I forget the name.
Lilith.
Lilith was the first female, supposedly, and she was not seductive to Adam, supposedly. So she was thrown onto the dark side of the moon, which are known as the moon people, by the way. And then
it wasn't so much
Adam took a rib and then created Eve. But there's so many individuals involved in scripting how we became.
But you see, the thing with Lilith, all right, was that Lilith was a very, very strong figure. She was like
the mother, the mean mother of the planet.
Yeah, but she was actually how can I say this? I guess she was actually, she was demonized by the patriarchal religions, okay? As opposed to what she really was, it seems, was that she was this dominant alpha female, okay? And Adam...
Mother nature in her raw form.
Nature in her raw form, exactly. And Adam was, you know, the alpha, well, I don't even know if he was the alpha male. Adam seemed that he was more, if you read these books on Adam and how he cowered and how he was seduced by Eve and all this, he seemed like a real schmuck, you know, like a fool. And,
you know, it never said in any of the works that they really picked an apple, you know. I happen to think it was a fig, but that's another.
There was always this, you know, by bringing Eve into the whole Genesis picture, and creation of man, is it made Eve, God cursed.
Yeah, women.
Eve.
Right.
God cursed women. Okay. And that was so, what can I say? It was so practical.
Well, look, anywhere through the Bible, almost any place. I mean, they even made Mary Magdalene a prostitute, you know, when
exactly.
We're down upon.
You have
to go through logic and reason and rhyme. But
Lilith was demonized, okay, and is demonized in all kinds of legends. But in essence, Lilith was the strong, independent woman, okay, and she was very rebellious. She was very, and she supposedly, in so these legends and these books that I've read on Lilith, she was disliked by Adam, okay. Because she was...
Wouldn't be seduced.
She didn't like Adam, actually, the way it turned out.
That's basically same thing I'm saying. Now, in that aspect, there's also the aspect of the serpent, the great serpent.
Right.
Tempter, in a sense. But if you go back into the antiquity and ancient writings... The great serpent was the wise one. In fact, even if you go into the medical thing, it shows two serpents coming up together for the DNA strand of, again, life regenerating itself.
And
there are so many works on these great...
And infinity are the symbol for infinity.
That's correct.
Is actually one serpent devouring his own tail.
Right, exactly.
You know, so it's like these are, I don't know.
Many things were written by individuals. Now, don't forget, religion. I mean, when the prophet, the teacher, Jesus walked upon our planet, he wasn't attempting, I believe, to create a religion by any form. And the real works came out at least between 40 and 60 years after his death. That's why finding some of these ancient scrolls that they found with the lost Gnostic Gospels of Mary Magdalene, of Judas, who knew that it was his job to free Jesus from his body, that he didn't really betray him. Now, this work that's coming out now in the...
So there's a book. There's a wonderful book called the Scriptures of Barnabas, and Barnabas. I mentioned this in my book, but I have the book here, which I should lend you if you haven't already read it. But the book of Barnabas was written in first person by a person who was verified to have lived during the time of Christ, and stated that he was given the assignment by Jesus to be the scribe, to be his scribe, and to write down these things. And that book was kept hidden in the Pope's library for up until the 5th century, all right?
You'd be surprised what's hidden in the tome. There's also the Book of Thomas.
Millions of books, actually, but that particular one, and then it was discovered And it was then it was discovered and then republished. And this guy, I actually had him on my show and we talked about it because it was a fascinating book.
It is.
The scriptures of Barnabas and how Christ said time and time again that he was not God. He was not the Messiah. He was not God. He was simply a man, all right? And he was saying that everybody could be like him, okay? And this was the way. He said he was the way, but you could be the way. I could be the way. You know what I mean? This was to achieve Christhood or to achieve the level of where you can heal or you can ascend or...
Yes, and then describing from
right.
this book in these ancient works, what it is that they're not dictating or putting their idea of what's going on. They're writing his teachings down in the first person. It's the same thing when they found this monk
right.
in the 1700s, and he had one of these Gnostic writings with him. All the writings were everything that Jesus spoke, and nothing about how he thought about it or how it should be studied, just his writing, much like the book that you're speaking.
That's right. And this was what this guy was ordered to do. He was asked by Christ by Jesus to write this stuff down.
Maybe
and
his name
know,
was Enoch.
But you know, just like Enoch, but Enoch lived many thousands
of years.
It's
the same story over and over and over again with different names and different people, but the same lessons, the same story.
You know,
here is truth, or look at this, or what about goodness?
He's in Plato, you know. Socrates wrote nothing down, or if he did, nobody knew. But yet, there's no works by Socrates. All those works were by Plato, who...
Yeah.
The dialogues of Socrates, you know, and the lessons and so on. And Plato was his scribe, was his student. And, you know, and everything we know about Socrates today was written by Plato, you know. So
I don't know if you ever heard the story. One of my dear teacher that I met when I was young, who was an occultist, and she studied all the mysteries. I crossed her path at a very young age, so I was taken under her wing. And she dictated this story to me verbally. And she said there was person, Socrates, you know, Socrates was watching this king walking down the street, and a hermit was peering through a bushel barrel and peeking at this king with his long robe, and it was getting all muddied and raining and things of this nature. But as he strolled by and with his nobility, the hermit comes out and Socrates says to him, he says, "Yes, I am a king." And the hermit turns around and Socrates says to him, "And so proud you are to have been the king." He was talking about pride, and I messed it up. But the idea here was he was talking about being so proud to be a king, and that he was wearing all these wealthy clothes and all of this, that the hermit came out and stomped on the trail of, I'm remembering it now, stomped on the trail of this muddied thing, and Socrates turns around, and the hermit is saying, "Your vanity." So he's slamming them with mud, and then Socrates turns around and he says, "Yes, and how proud you were to do it." So he just gave, it was a karma thing, you know, he just gave him back exactly what he was doing. All right, I messed it up a little. The story's from memory, but if I can find that quote for you in my notes, I'll bring it back up.
It
had to do with pride, you know, the idea of pride, and the hermit thought he was being too proud of his journey, and muddied him up, and then Socrates said to him, you know, how proud you were to have done that, you know. So it was a complete circle again. But I like Plato's works.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
Shadows.
I think if there's anything I keep learning, and Delilah keeps reminding me, is a false pride.
That's what it's about, yeah.
Very dangerous, yeah. And it's a dangerous thing to have. And, you know, and
a hitchhiker. Pride hitchhikes in all different levels. You know, if we're going to go for the seven levels, you know, we can have spiritual pride as well, you know, just like the ego. You know, the only thing that stands between us and the self is the ego, or the let's say, holographic vision. We see the seven, but where's the fruit, you know, that whole thing.
True. I mean, it's the ego that is the hologram, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to laugh constantly because when I'm reminded that whatever it is, but trying to maintain humility, because that's what all the prophets have stated, you know, and they were all humble, you know, but be humble, you know, there's no right for you to be proud of anything. I mean, when you could to be overly proud is a danger. You know,
it becomes a veil. It becomes a veil between the knower and the known. Like,
yeah, it's true, and it takes up so much of your. It blocks so much of the energy.
A clog in the artery. Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? It resists the cosmic flow. It resists the knowledge. It resists everything. And
it's
that's
our
why
creation. We have created the resistance.
Yeah,
even if one sees something that is phenomenal or great or paranormal, they still doubt it, even if they see it with their own eyes. And even if they don't see it and they know, they want it produced to have trust. It's seeking the knowledge, seeking truth, seeking self, seeking to brotherhood, community, world peace, let's say. I'm not a beauty pageant queen, but that's not a bad idea right now.
But, you know, the truth is so humbling. It's just so humbling when you learn the truth about anything and you realize how duped you've been over years, or, you know, how could I have believed that? You know, how could I have thought that? Why? How could I have let myself be so blind? You know, and truth is a really, really tough pill to take.
The more you know, you realize the less you know. The truth
the less
makes
you know.
How ignorant we really are. So, in my meditations, this teacher I was telling you about gave me this quote before. She said to me, in your meditations, just say you want to know the knower. So you seek to know the knower, you know, or you seek direct knowledge. Seek where you can be a servant to humanity, or if you're going to be a slave to anything, let it be the universe or the cosmos or that which you know your own truth to be. It doesn't have to be what I'm saying or what you're saying or the Bible or the ancient texts or Enoch.
Yeah.
I believe that seed or that knowing that has been deposited with these sevens upon our planet, we all can nurture and at least invest in and ponder on thoughts that are greater than the thoughts we've had previously. I mean, we have the opportunity to think of whatever we want to think of next without karma. So,
that's true.
You know, and that gives us the opportunity. Let's say we use the word humble, but how do you become humble? You know, it's not a stage. It's not a game. As you begin to search or seek or ponder, there's a thirst for this reverence of knowledge, and I believe that's a good word to use. You know, the love of knowledge, or the sacrifices, the serving of humanity. And there are people who say things to me like, "Why do you give that person love? They don't deserve it." And I says, "Well, why should I deny myself the opportunity to give love because of what someone else did?"
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know. Early on, I'll never forget this. Early on, when I started this particular program back in 2006, and I remember I was doing a Thursday night show, just like now, and I was reading something. I forget exactly what it was, but what the show was about. But I got a call toward the end of the show, and it was from some woman in Texas, and she says, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm L.A. Steel." I said, and she says, "Why are you doing this show?" I said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Because I want to do the show." I said, I have a radio show also, and I television programs and stuff like that, and this is what I do. But she says, "Where are you getting all this information? Why are you putting out all this information?" She says, I said, "So people like you can hear it, you know." She says, "Yeah, what are you getting from it?" And I said, "Well," I said, "I'm getting something," I said, "fulfilling to me. Number one is I'm learning something." And I said, "I might as well share it with people over the airwaves," I said, "so they can learn, and maybe they have something that they can tell me, just like you." I said, "Do you have, did you have a question, or do you have anything that you about this about what I'm doing?" She says, "I just don't understand why you're doing it." Okay, I said, "Well, what do you do for a living?" She says, "I'm a lawyer." I said, "Well, that explains why you don't understand what I'm doing."
There are individuals.
There are truly individuals. She said to me, I said, "But didn't you get into law to try to help people?" She says, "Oh, I'm a corporate lawyer. I don't help people." No. But it's like, you know, it was really interesting. I never heard from that lady again, but I'll never forget it, because she put me to the test and said, she called and said, that was the first question. "What are you doing this for? Why are you giving people this kind of information? What do you, what's your thought?" And I don't know.
Right there, part of that journey would be her idea of, if I am doing something, I need to receive.
Right. That's exactly what she was saying.
The thing is about receiving. I'm not going to give if I'm not going to receive. Well, you don't receive unless you give.
That's right.
You create the journey around you. But if you are on a journey seeking, I'm not saying seeking to receive. See, that's a reward. And many people are looking for rewards. We all want acceptance. None of us would want to go through life and don't want to be liked or not accepted or things of that nature. But the acceptance should be accepting ourselves in being able to share and give, which is a very difficult thing. We're into, we're brainwashed, really, into receiving. I'm not going to do that if I'm not going to get this back, or that type of thing. So to give unselfishly,
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes of all time was a Shakespeare quote when he said, "Kill all lawyers." And I thought that was so funny because, to this day, a very, very famous quote, but it's so appropriate all the time, because who do you hate more in the world than a lawyer? Okay, and 9 out of 10 times, especially if you're on the opposite end of a lawyer, you know.
Yes, so now we're not in a world of laws. Now we could take that law and even bring it to the highest level of the cosmic laws and the chains and rounds of planetary evolution. There are cosmic laws where we live under, and yet we have man-made laws that perhaps don't actually have that co-measurement, don't actually balance. See, this is a very interesting point, because what happens is all knowledge does is indicate man's ignorance, really.
Oh, boy, is that true. We reflect ignorance every day. I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, I don't go to many lectures anymore, but when I was in my 20s and 30s, I used to attend lectures for different people. And, of course, when I was in college, I'd have to listen to people all the time. But I would go to certain select lectures on things, and especially on religion and philosophy and some political things. But most of the time, I would sit there, and I would be totally flabbergasted at the ignorance of these assholes that were up there. I'd go, God, how can you say this stuff? You know, and then I would get up and I would argue, because I would bring a text, or I would quote some kind of text or some kind of thing, or it's general knowledge that this is the case. How can you say this? In some cases I'd actually be kicked out of the hall because I was calling the expert an idiot, you know.
Yeah, well, they can become learned, but it doesn't mean that they're good.
To perpetrate a lie when it's just a lie, all right? It's like and to be an expert at the lie, all right, was like, to me, holy cow! And I would see this more and more, especially in the academic fields. Oh my God, they would throw out, you know.
Yeah, the constant disillusionment, you know, you're just disillusioned and you find yourself that they're wrong, and then you have difficulty with it. But
they revise and revise and until, you know, the truth is totally gone from anything, and the hypocrisy is there, and the cover-ups and the delusions, all right, that would emanate, which was just obvious, so obvious to me, and I'd be sitting there, even recently, in the last couple of years, two, three years ago, I was at a lecture by some very prominent guy. I mean, he was the head of Intel. He was a former chairman of Intel. He was a former chairman of this, that, and everything else. And he was giving a speech on China, and. And I walked out, there were 300 people there, and I was so furious at what this bastard was talking about and the treason that he was perpetrating and trying to tell people. And yet everyone was sitting there like they were like, you know, and I'm going, and I was looking at Lila, I said, Lila, I got to get the hell out of here. I'm gonna run up on the stage. All right. This guy is a flaming ass. All right, how can he say crap like this and get away with it? All right, and here's a guy who's trading. This guy was a treasonous bastard. He was selling all of our software, all of our secrets, all of our everything. All right, and our industry, and saying that the United States should be a second world country. All right, next to China and all this kind of shit. I got absolutely livid. And there was a friend with me, and it was everything I could do. I just had to leave the room, and I made a scene as I left the room.
Patience.
My God, I mean, these are the kind of things that would drive me.
I'll tell
me.
You what he did. He wanted.
Which is why I needed to have a TV show, and I needed to have a radio show.
And you need to get it out,
To talk truth. You know, to explain things and not listen to the crap that you hear on mainstream news or have to listen to, you know, idiots, you know, and have no way to combat that kind of stuff.
Okay. And, comes in, because individuals, as you're speaking of, they want to gain dominion over the minds or the attitudes of others, where it's much more important to gain humility. But that is their way of having power. Gain dominion of either over the minds or the attitudes of the individuals around them, whether it be truth or not. That domination is power, and if they can instill or pound that power into an individual, then it could change their minds into the attitude that he would want them to have. Now,
the complete opposite of humility. And corporations lie to you, and this kind of thing. And you know, and you see it, and you know it, and you're saying, what the hell am I listening to? And how can this be so pervasive everywhere? How can we just be living in this great lie, you know, under this blanket of lies and deceit? And that's what infuriates me the most, and that's why I try to combat it with these programs.
Patience sometimes works, and I use the word patience because sometimes I'm ready to jump at somebody because I have a tendency. I want to change their thought process. I want to fix a word and make it more positive.
Very,
you know, like this nurturing mother. But
you don't like untruths either, and you feel like it has to be corrected. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And when you hear some blithering idiot spouting off something that you know is totally and absolutely false, and yet you're seeing people being manipulated by what they're saying, you get up. I mean, I'm sure that you have corrected many people. You've corrected me many, many times. I'm sure you've corrected many people over it because that's your nature.
I attempt to present that which I I like that better than saying correct, because I don't really, you know, each time you actually have a disillusionment, or each time you see that there's an error, but this error has become so much a part of your life that you start to give it up. You start to give up your own ideas or your own error. So in the wisdom of it, and you use integrity of your thought process, it's not by neglecting the error. It's by placing maybe a new action over an old method of measurement and understanding, and that's that knowledge that makes you realize how ignorant we are, even with the knowledge we have. The more you know, the less you know.
isn't that true, huh? And I guess on that, we should probably think of winding up the show, but I was thinking, I'd love to have you come back on, and we can discuss a little more on Enoch, but I'd also like to have you come back on and possibly do some readings for people or something.
I would love that. I'd be more than happy.
Every Thursday night is open to you, dear. So, you know, anytime if you'd like to be on next week or the week after or whenever you're available, please let me know, and I'd love to have you on.
I appreciate that, and you know, I enjoy doing the show. I do not like to lock in every single.
I understand that, but
that's just the nature of what crosses my path. I enjoy and unfolding, a discovery as we speak, the spontaneity of the truth and the things that cross our path. And right now, if there are people out there who are suffering and are being challenged by reality, just try a different thought. Just remember that you can think of whatever you want to think of next without the comma, and begin to recognize, perhaps, or at least ponder on the idea of their purpose or what service or good they may be able to do without having to receive, you know, just because you can. We do things because we can. We're allowed.
I also want to mention that Maria does psychic readings and spiritual communications. And I want to give you, would you like to give your phone number or your email address?
The email is nyfix@optonline.net. That's New York at optonline.net.
And New York Fix, NYFix
at
optonline.net. And, you know, and she does a great tarot card reading as well. And
I wrote a whole thing on the tarot because when you were doing the reading for Our Nation on one of your shows, I looked at all the cards. And you did an excellent job. Had other things I wanted to add to it, but perhaps we can save that for another time.
Oh, yeah. But I thank you so much for being on tonight. And we spent a whole lot of time. We also spent 2 hours. And that'll be all.
Quickly, yeah. And I appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure, Leo, working with you.
Maria, and love you to death. And I hope you feel well.
I'm better. Better, thank you. And say hello to Lila for me, will you please?
I will. And I hope you. I hope you're back with me real soon.
I will be. And George, if you're listening out there, hi. So
yeah.
I'll hope to you soon. And thank you again, Leo, for the.
Let me know when you'd like to be on next. Okay.
I shall.
Okay, and we'll put you right on.
Thank you again.
All right.
Bye now.
Okay. Good night. And that was Maria Fix Algeri. Again, you can reach her at nyfix@optonline.net. All right? And I wish you good night. And talk to you next week. Here we go.